Thursday, January 14th, 2021, afternoon session to Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Rubio?
Here.
Ryan?
Here.
Hardesty?
Here.
Maps?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGov PDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, as well as Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing our council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact as well as to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your ongoing patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to conduct the City's business. With that, we'll hear on the rules of order and decorum from our legal counsel. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for Communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah, thank you. So our first item today is a land use issue. It's item number 30. Could you please read item 30?
Consider appeal of the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity in Design against the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions Hyatt Place, a 23-story mixed-use building at 350 Northwest 12th Avenue in the Pearl Subdistrict of the Central City Plan District, LU19-145295DZ.
Very good. First, the city attorney will make some announcements about today's hearing. Good afternoon.
Thank you. This is an evidentiary hearing. This may means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. I'm first going to describe the order of testimony today. First, staff will explain the process since council's remand last year. Next, a design commissioner will present the recommendation of the design commission. Then the applicant will present their report and have 10 minutes to do so. Supporters of the project will then have 3 minutes each, followed by the appellant, who will present their testimony for 10 minutes, followed by supporters of the appellant, 3 minutes each. The applicant will then have rebuttal for 3 minutes. The appellant will then have rebuttal following that for 3 minutes. And at that point, we anticipate that the mayor will close the public testimony for the hearing. For an evidentiary hearing, there are several guidelines for those attending council today. For to submit evidence into the record, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the council clerk. Similarly, originals of any materials must be given to the council clerk, including PowerPoint presentations, to make sure they become part of the record. Second, testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed to the applicable approval criteria, which staff will identify, or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to this decision. As I said, BBS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report. Third, issues must be raised with specificity. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. The applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If they fail to do so, or raise other issues relating to conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. I also want to note today that the representatives of both the applicant and the appellant are participants on this Zoom meeting and therefore have the ability to raise any procedural or other objections during the pendency of the hearing. And unless there are any questions, Mayor, I think you can continue with the script.
Very good. The council held hearings on this appeal on August 20th, as well as September 16th, 2020. The council continued this matter to allow further review of the proposed development by the Design Commission. After two Design Commission meetings in October and November, the commission has forwarded a revised recommendation to us. So we're here today to hear from the Design Commission, staff, and interested parties, and hopefully to reach a tentative decision. Since we last heard this matter, we have two new members of the City Council. It's my understanding that Commissioners Rubio and Mapps have each reviewed the record in this matter and intend to participate. Commissioners, would you please confirm that that is correct, that you have reviewed the record?
Yes, Rubio.
Yes, Mayor, I have.
Okay, Commissioner Mapps and Commissioner Rubio?
Yes, that is correct.
Very good, thank you. So both commissioners have reviewed the record. We also need to revisit conflicts and ex parte contacts that may have arisen since our last hearing on this matter. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest? And if so, please raise your hand. Commissioner Mapps?
Mr. Mayor, I don't think this is a conflict, but I would like to reveal that about a year ago, I met with representatives from the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity in Design. They shared with me their concerns about this project. I believe that meeting happened in December of 2019.
Very good, thank you. And anybody else? Commissioner Hardesty?
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say that I do not have any perceived conflicts of interest.
Very good. Do any members of the council have any new ex parte contacts to declare information gathered outside of this hearing that they'd like to disclose? No council members have ex parte contacts to declare. Does anyone present in the council chamber wish to ask any commissioner who has answered any questions about this particular item? And Lindley, I believe what Commissioner Mapps raised does not constitute a conflict of interest. Is that correct?
I agree. It does not. At most, it would constitute an ex parte contact. And as he's disclosed it, it'll be fine. So
okay.
Thank you.
I don't see anybody. And Keelan, can you confirm nobody is raising their hands to ask any questions on that subject?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Have any members of the council made any visits to the site involved in this matter that they have not already declared? Very good. Do council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin this hearing? I'm not seeing any, therefore we will get into the meat of the hearing. We'll start with the staff report, approximately 5 minutes.
Well, Mayor and City Commissioners, thank you. Before I screen share, I'd just like to say a little bit. The last time you saw this project was on August 20th and then again on September 16th, 2020. In a latter hearing, you chose to remand the project back to the Design Commission at the suggestion of the applicant. Well, a few of the commissioners sitting at these hearings voiced support for the project as it was presented. There was also feedback from other commissioners requesting additional responses to broadly speaking, the following key aspects of the applicable design guidelines, those being context, pedestrian realm, and the building's massing, sculpting, and setbacks. At remand, the project was seen by the Design Commission on October 22nd and November 12th, 2020. From these two meetings with the Design Commission, the applicant made the following alterations to the building, responding to Council's concerns to better meet the applicable design guidelines. For context, to further respond to guidelines and emphasize the tripartite base, middle, and top expression that's found in the other buildings of the Pearl District and the 13th Avenue Historic District, the middle of the north and the west elevations have been set back an additional foot from what was previously approved. The top portion of the building has been set back an additional 2 feet on each elevation. The middle mass of the tower has also been further sculpted, being lowered by one level to better emphasize the tripartite form of the building. Regarding pedestrian realm, while Council suggested additional setbacks to the ground floor of the north and the west elevations, Design Commission noted that the dominant architectural character of the Pearl District is buildings with ground floors extending to the property lines. With this, the Design Commission felt the previously approved design, which set back the ground floor storefront 3 feet 6 inches, was a stronger response to guidelines. Canopy projections for the lower canopies have been increased 1.5 feet from 4 feet 6 inches to 6 feet. And canopy projections for the north, or for the corner entrance canopy, have been increased from 5.5 feet to 6 feet. Sculpting, massing, and setbacks. As previously mentioned, the middle of the north and west elevations have been set back an additional foot. The top has been recessed an additional 2 feet on each elevations. And the mass of the middle has been dropped down an additional level from the top on both the north and the west elevations. So with this, want to just provide a very quick kind of reminder or refresher of the site and the zoning. Sorry, so again, the program overview. This is a 23-story tower, 250 feet tall. It's roughly 160 hotel rooms and 111 studio units. It is located at the northeast corner of the lot. So to the west is Northwest 12th and north is Flanders. This image gives you to the west, to the left, it's showing the historic district. So that orange line is showing the extent of the historic district. The areas in blue are what we call contributing resources within the historic districts. And the yellow image, the yellow lots are non-contributing. Regardless, this is in the Pearl District, but outside the historic district. Zoning, it's, as I mentioned, it's in the Central City Plan District. It is in the, its base zone is EX, which is Central Employment, and it has a design overlay. The floor area ratio, the FAR, is a 6-to-1 base with additional bonuses, which the applicant took advantage of, allowing it to go to what it's, what it is now, which is approximately 18.7-to-1. And then the height, the base height allowance is 100 feet. However, again, taking advantage of bonuses allowed by the code, it could extend up to 250 feet, which is what's proposed. The approval criteria are the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines and the River District Design Guidelines. And this is just essentially showing the process of a type 3 land use review. And the arrow is essentially showing where we are in that process. And then to kind of further illustrate the history of this project, the procedural history, this came in April of 2019, and it had gone to Design Commission hearing four times, essentially, concluding on January 16th with an approval. It was appealed shortly after that in February. The pink area in the middle is showing essentially the time when it has been in its appeal period. It was set back a number of times due to COVID, and remailing and so on. On September, again, it went to City Council in August, and then September, remanded back to Design Commission in October and November, and here we are in City Council hearing number 3 in January. So with that, the alternatives facing the council are deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's findings and conditions of approval, deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's findings and conditions of approval, but with the revisions to the proposal that require modifications, findings, or conditions, or grant the appeal and deny the application. I'd be happy to take questions. If not, we have a design commissioner, Chandra Robinson, who's here to also speak to the commission.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions at this point? All right, with that then, thank you for that presentation. We'll now hear from the representative of the design commission, 7 minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Chandra Robinson, and I'm a member of the Design Commission, and I'm here to present our recommendation from the November 12th, 2020 hearing to council. Thank you for having me here. It's quite an honor. So to begin, I just wanted to remind folks that design commissioners are private citizens and we're volunteers, and we take our positions really seriously. We do this work because we really love Portland and we want to contribute to it remaining a vibrant and beautiful city. And I personally grew up here in Portland and have watched it grow, and I'm really honored to be part of the process that allows us to review what gets built in the central city. And as design commissioners, we're not meant to redesign projects entirely, but rather we suggest changes that can be made that will improve the project's response to the three tenets of design, which are context, public realm, and quality and permanence. And every project that comes into the hearings room must meet the guidelines, but every project is going to achieve different levels of success in each of those guidelines. So what we really look for in design commission is some level of balance. And some projects are just really successful in one area and still meet guidelines in others, but are maybe less successful. So with this remand, it allowed the design commission the opportunity to make additional alterations to the approved design based on council's direction at that time. And there had already really been significant input from Design Commission that led to these noticeable alterations because we had seen it in multiple design advice requests and land use reviews. The Hyatt Place project is one that we've seen many times and we made suggestions and we feel like it has improved significantly. So some of those initial things that we saw, we pushed very hard on. So initial iterations of the design at DARs had much larger sort of blank walls, fewer windows, less glazing. The base, middle, and top were less defined, which meant that it didn't respond to the context around it as well. There were sort of, the west elevation had fewer massing shifts on it, and the north elevation was pretty flat. It didn't have as many balconies. Those were only at the residential levels and not the hotel levels, which made it seem sort of uneven. And the sort of base of the building was kind of a single story expression. And in this revised design, it responds more to the context in that the datum, which I'm just gonna try and write here on Viva Annotate, the datum that you see is really allowing it to respond to other buildings in the area across the street and in other locations. And previously, it didn't extend as much there. So in this new version of the design, which we saw in November, there were changes made to the height up here. And I don't know if the yellow reads very well, so I'm just gonna scribble it in a little bit. Changes made there, changes made to the height here. And then as Art mentioned, these planes were pushed back further than they were so that it created a different massing expression. It was a little bit more interesting than it was before and responded a little bit better to context, which was really important to commission. So sometimes I think it's difficult to look at a tall building in an area where other buildings are much smaller and kind of understand how that fits into the context, but you really have to think about the future context. In the future, there will be bigger buildings here, and if the zoning code allows it, then it's Design Commission's role to really massage the building in whatever ways we can to make it respond a little bit better. Some of the things that were improved were here at the corner. Previously, the entry was not at the corner, and so one of the design guidelines is, you know, building strong corners that are interesting and sort of draw activity, and it responded really well in that sense. In the previous review of City Council, one of the comments really was that in this location, perhaps the setbacks could be deeper, but what's really important in the Pearl District is that the streetscape is really active and vibrant, and part of that is having a little bit of compression in that space where there are people and there are retail spaces and restaurants with tables and things that are sort of close together, and that kind of creates a lot of activity that makes the spaces really interesting. So those are some of the things that we held on to. We didn't want that to get deeper, because what that does is actually draws the activity farther away from the street and pushes it back into the private space of the building. And part of the life of the city is kind of keeping that out to the forefront. So we really felt that that was important to keep there. And we did really like sort of the massing shifts that pushed back some of these planes and made it a little bit more interesting. So there's a little bit of, there's a greater difference between the face of the sort of concrete panels at the base and then the metal panels at the top. And thinking back to when we first saw this project, you know, the base of the building, which is this whole area down here, right? It wasn't as balanced as it is now, and it made it seem like it had less of the tripart type design that Art just mentioned, where the base is very strong and you can clearly see a middle and a top. And through this design process, it has been sculpted further, and I think it's been very successful in making those improvements that make the response better to context. And then sort of thinking about kind of all of the things that we look at, you know, the Central City Design Guidelines and the River District Design Guidelines, we're always looking at all of these things, right? We're looking at it emphasizing Portland themes and enhancing and embellishing and identifying areas and reinforcing those special areas. And, you know, and guideline A8 is contribute to a vibrant streetscape, which I talked about before, is very, which is successful here. They were also able to better incorporate art and water features at that ground level area. Previously, when we saw it, there weren't any, and now they kind of added them right in this area where there's a water feature right in the wall that's in, it's a sort of art piece. I think they've done a good job of that. Guideline C7 is designing corners that build active intersections, and like I described before, I think they've done a good job of that. And differentiating the sidewalk level of buildings is guideline C8. And so really emphasizing the base of this building is really what's helped that a lot, and making sure that they have active uses on the ground floor. So you're not looking into a space that's very quiet, but instead it's a retail space that's very active, right? So, and that's really what's important to maintain in the Pearl District, is this sort of active retail experience. And designing for coherency is guideline C5. And that's a really important guideline, because you really need to be able to look at a building and kind of understand the design of it, right? So you understand that there are these planes on either side of the building that really kind of pop out from the rest of the tower. And that happens on the west and the north elevation that you can see. And previously in the design, it was a lot flatter and there was a lot less glazing. So these are just some of the reasons why the Design Commission did unanimously approve this project for the second time. And that's because it does meet the design guidelines. And it, when it came back to us on the remand, it simply was doing a better job even than it had been before. And I think what's important to consider, again, is that every building is going to be different and is going to have a different response to the guidelines. But I think that's something that the next designers of a tower in the Pearl can learn from, is that the Pearl District neighborhood is very involved and they really care about the design of the buildings that are in their neighborhood. And every designer that comes through there needs to really pay attention and listen and make change to the design as soon as they can, so that they make sure that the neighborhood sees the building as an asset to the neighborhood. And I think that this process of coming back into council will really help designers, I think, in the future understand how important that is. And that's really all I have for you. So if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We appreciate your additional work on this. I'll have more to say on that later, but thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Chandra while we've got her here? Very good. Next, we will hear from the applicant. Approximately 10 minutes, please.
Hi, I'm Gary Larson. We have our screen up, and we'll begin now. Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, good afternoon. I'm Gary Larson with OTAC, design lead for the Hyatt Place project. We are here to present design modifications made in response to City Council comments and presented to the Design Commission on remand. Renee France of Renter White, our land use attorney, and members of our team are here to respond to questions. As a follow-up to the background provided in the staff report and Commissioner Robinson's presentation, we will provide a brief review of the proposed design changes approved by the Design Commission since the last council hearing. Our primary objective in the remand process has been to provide design changes that respond to directives from council. The result is an improved project that continues to satisfy the applicable guidelines that serve as the approval criteria for this review. We examine the guidelines and unique character of the neighborhood again, looking to ensure a project clearly responsive to context and fully in compliance with guidelines. These design modifications resulted in the Design Commission's unanimous recommendation to Council to approve the project. The project has been in design for over 2 years. Design review events are listed on the left. The process has been thorough, thoughtful, and beneficial. Throughout this time, we received guidance from the Design Commission, neighborhood input from PDNA, and BDS staff assistance. With this focused effort, the design has evolved and become stronger and more responsive with each iteration to ensure that the city will have an excellent and contextual building. As noted, the design team developed and proposed multiple building changes responding to directives given by council in their decision to remand the project and presented those changes to the Design Commission for their review. The views you see here show the previously approved design. What we heard from City Council was to consider the following: increased setbacks on street-facing walls for the middle and top of the building, further reductions to massing of the middle and top, improvements to the public realm, and to address specific guidelines. Here's what we did. For the first remand design review hearing, we created a package of three differing ideas that explored each council directive involving context, setbacks, massing, and the public realm. From these, we developed a preferred scheme that addressed all directives and explored neighborhood context to strengthen how to further identify and celebrate the unique elements of the Pearl neighborhood. The design is based on a tripartite concept, the architectural notion that a building should provide a distinct base, middle, and top, each differentiated from the other. The tripartite concept is one of the design approaches suggested by River District Design Guideline A5-1-1. This concept we developed to shape and articulate the building's form to visually reduce its mass. Our proposed design incorporates direction from the Design Commission. These are the architectural moves we made. In the middle of the setback, 3 feet from the property line, the previously approved design was 2 feet. The top of and northwest corner are set back 7 feet, previously at 5 feet. The cornice line of the middle was lowered by one floor from the previously approved design. Canopies were extended to 6 feet, previously between 4 and 5 feet. The ground level storefront remains set back 3'6" as in the previously approved design. The design presented in the first remand hearing increased the setback to 5 feet along Flanders Street. The Design Commission considered 5 feet to be too great, noting that interior activity would not therefore generate the energy and the immediacy characteristic of Pearl sidewalk life. They specifically concluded that the ground floor setbacks should remain the same. Finally, the hotel entrance at the northwest corner is set back 7 feet. Previously, this was 5 feet. While these may seem like modest changes based solely on a review of the numbers, as you will see in the coming slides, these changes have meaningful impact on the overall appearance and massing of the building. The actual reduction of the building's mass at the street-facing facades from these moves is over 5,000 square feet. This image displays building exterior materials in 25 blocks surrounding the project site. It shows an eclectic mix of exterior materials, Concrete, stucco, and brick share equal visibility. There is a diverse mix of old and new, short and tall, with varied materials and details. Newer buildings have comfortably settled into their locations and have very much contributed to the context to which the Hyatt building responds. Here are views further demonstrating the district's diversity. The left looks south on historic 13th Avenue. The distant building with its glass facade fits comfortably into this scene. At center, we see one building using concrete, glass, and metal panels. In the right view, three buildings, old to new, all stand within one block of each other. This scene truly demonstrates the visual richness of the neighborhood. Here we see buildings of various ages. They show a constant use of strong columns in equal bays, filled with a variety of glazing solutions and canopy designs. There is a unifying and anchoring quality in these solutions seen throughout the district. We use these same elements to make recognizable neighborhood connection at the base of the Hyatt building. These images show interior activity spilling onto the sidewalks in the public realm. Scenes like these, seen throughout the area, demonstrate the neighborhood's charm and appeal. Activity like this creates community and a sense of being part of it. This is the previously approved design. The following images show the modifications to setbacks and massing we propose that will produce effective response to council directives. The proposed design here shows further setbacks from 2 to 3 feet for the middle and from 5 to 7 feet for the top, and as well lowering the cornice line of the middle by one floor on all four sides of the building. This view of the previous design is looking west along Flanders. The proposed design in this image shows that lowering the cornice line of the middle effectively reduces the building mass. Here we see the previous design looking east along Flanders from the 13th Avenue Historic District. This view shows the proposed design. The setback modifications and lowering the middle cornice line positively decrease the mass and scale of the building. This is the previous design at the base of the building. The proposed design is seen in this view. The additional setback of the middle and corner give added emphasis to the strength of the base. The base is a particularly important part of the building with which to establish solid connection to the neighborhood context. The design of the base takes cues from neighboring buildings in terms of height, the bold columns, and detailing. The height of the base responds to the tripart concept, a concept seen frequently in the Pearl, and is held at a datum line of 3 to 4 stories, consistent with other buildings in the area. In addition, the carving of the northwest corner and top respond to similar solutions in the immediate neighborhood. Now a look at the public realm. The building facade at the street defines the public realm. The sidewalk itself includes a walking zone, street trees and furniture, and additional area at the street intersection. A full 7 feet of setback will open and celebrate this important street corner. The first floor glazed storefront walls bring building interior activities to the street. The double height storefront and equal bays defined by bold columns employ the well-used theme of strong bays and robust window and canopy detailing seen earlier. A night view shows building internal activity on display to pedestrians that will spill onto the sidewalk in a cafe setting, adding to the street life so characteristic of the Pearl. This view shows the public realm along Flanders. The storefront setback provides space adjacent to the walking zone to accommodate retractable walls and chairs and tables that will continue to contribute to the life of the street. This was an important factor for the Design Commission in rejecting the increased setbacks proposed on remand. This last image shows the building on a congenial sunny afternoon. The continued support of this project by the Design Commission reinforces a commitment to creating inner city density envisioned in the 2035 plan, achieved through appropriate, responsible, and exciting design consistent with the city's history and support for quality design, permanence, and contextual responsiveness. Thank you very much. We are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Appreciate the presentation. Colleagues, any questions at this point? Seeing none, we will hear from supporters of the project. Keelan will call your name. You have 3 minutes each for your testimony.
We have one person signed up, Kathleen O'Donnell.
Very good. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I know that this is just a reiteration, but the concerns from the Pearl neighbors for integrity and design is less about the look of the building at this point, but its functionality as it pertains to people going along the street, trying to drive with a bike way on one side, and the lack of parking for anybody accessing the building, especially the hotel part, and no available parking anywhere in the region. So we're concerned about the congestion. And I know that's not in the mandate of the design part, but it seems to be the elephant in the room.
Does that complete your testimony?
That completes my testimony.
Very good, clear and to the point. Thank you, appreciate it. Next up we will, and Keelan, that is the last individual who would like to speak, and you know, I think the testimony was self-evident, but this is the space for supporters of the project if there are any.
I believe everyone else signed up is in support of the appellant.
Very good, okay, and I realize it's confusing, so we live with it. Appellant, you are up, and the appellant has 10 minutes.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Great. My name is Carrie Richter. Good afternoon, Honorable Mayor and Commissioners. I am the attorney representing the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity of Design. I have a short slide presentation that I want to run through quickly. I know you all have read the record. If you haven't gone to see the models that are at Bureau of Development Services, this is a photograph of one of those models, and it's the only scale model in the record. No other sightline renderings of the proposed tower from the historic district exist. What this model shows is that this building is 7 stories taller than any other building within the neighboring 3 blocks. It is 21 to 22 stories taller than the buildings in the historic district shown in the foreground of this picture. This remarkable disparity cannot be papered over or mitigated or made compatible by application of the design guidelines that match what the Design Commission has decided works for a 10 to 16 story building. I think you heard the applicant say that there's short buildings and tall buildings, which is true, but there's no building that is 23 stories tall. In order to approve this application, you must find that this project identifies an area's special features and qualities by integrating them into the new development. That's guideline A5. I don't believe that there's any dispute over what these special features include. Mr. Graves talked about the historic district right here, located half a block away. What I haven't heard talk much about is the Flanders Bikeway, a dedicated greenway that will connect NATO Parkway with Northwest Portland. And it is the existence of this greenway that forces all of the traffic for this project that this project demands onto 100 linear feet of Northwest 12th Avenue. These service demands will be dictated by 160 hotel units and 111 residences. In addition to building height, this tremendous density served by one side of a building is absolutely unprecedented. As mentioned, all new development must include those special design components that make an area unique, as determined within 3 blocks. Rather than requiring this applicant to conduct a survey and provide detailed context modeling, I will note that the survey that the applicant just showed did not show 3 blocks, it showed 2 blocks from the subject site. They talk about things that you can find anywhere in the city. And in fact, the Benson Tower bears a striking resemblance in its tower design to the subject site, with some modest tripartite setbacks to create some sculpting, many balconies, and the like. The only issue addressed in remand was the obligation to provide greater setback at the middle and top of the building. An additional 1 foot beyond what was before the council before at the middle and 2 feet for the top. What this slide shows is that this 2 feet setback at the top and 1 foot at the bottom is nowhere wide enough to integrate with the character of the district. Here you can see the Gregory and the Elizabeth on the left side. Both of these buildings are further away from the historic district, and the depth of those setbacks, you can see tables, umbrellas, chairs. People can sit out there and it activates the street. These are examples that the applicant used in their testimony, as you can see from the slide on the left, to show context. But all of those buildings have setbacks at a greater depth than what was proposed here. As for the top of the building, even the applicant appears to concede that the design of the top is most similar to buildings located outside of the district, Wells Fargo and Standard Insurance. It is the top of this building that is going to be most visible from the historic district. And it is the top of this building that is the most discordant, does not reflect the character of the district. And that is a violation of guideline A5. There's no question this design is better, but I think the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity and Design's position is that it doesn't go far enough. It doesn't reflect the unique elements of the district enough. Moving on to consider the bikeway, and this is something that I did not hear any discussion of so far. This design completely fails to integrate or accommodate the bicycling into its design. You received some testimony from Mr. Ross Lagusa, a bicycle commuter who lives in the Pearl, explaining that using an elevator to access bicycle parking is unique and will be too cumbersome to get much use. He said that this design illustrates, quote, an utter lack of concern for the convenience and safety of people who ride. As evidence, take a look at the applicant's streetscape renderings. The renderings they just showed, and an excerpt of that is in this photo. There's no cyclist shown. If they shut their eyes, they won't have to acknowledge the bikeway, but this is not what the guidelines require in terms of designing a building that accommodates the special features of the district. This Oregon Smart Growth testimony states this location is, quote, ideal for mixed use development with a range of housing affordability as it is served by significant public transit investments, light rail, streetcar, bikeways, greenways, and is exactly the type of project that the Central City 2035 envisions and encourages. Ms. Baldwin is right that this site has all the characteristics, and it is because of this amazing level of public investment that this particular design is so wrong. The city gets no inclusionary housing from hotel units. So for 271 units, only 17 or fewer will be affordable. Or more likely, the applicant will make payment into the Affordable Housing Fund, realizing essentially no affordable units at a location that we all agree represents a site so suitable to accommodate them. Bikeways need to encourage those who have bikes through a building design that encourages bikes. Not all mixed-use buildings are the same. And although the site is ground zero for good alternative transportation, this design is not. Again, the South Pearl is unique in that development must be scaled to safely accommodate all modes. Design B2 requires as much, where it says all development must protect the pedestrian. So whereas you heard testimony that we want to have compression in the public realm, we don't want too much compression. And reducing all of the service demands on this building to 100 feet is essentially too much compression. The lack of bicycle amenities coupled with no off-street parking or loading will force all of the valet, rideshare, and deliveries to block traffic, creating dangerous conditions for pedestrians. Refusing to include any off-street vehicle accommodation was a design choice, and thus the consequences of that choice are directly relevant to this review. if the Design Commission could conclude that locating valet parking internal to the project for the Pearl Marriott Residence Inn was inappropriate and should be located on the street, it can and must do the exact opposite here, where there is unrefuted testimony that this level of density cannot be safely accommodated along 100 feet of street frontage. Guidelines 8A8 and B4 require the provision of stopping, public stopping and resting places. We have submitted evidence to show that new buildings provide these places and even old ones for the Chown Loft, though. But these benches were not provided as part of this project. All of these guidelines, along with those raised by Pearl Neighbors for Integrity and Design throughout this project, exist to protect the high design quality and livability of the Pearl District. The Hyatt design, particularly its tower, is unremarkable and does not reflect the character of the 13th Avenue Historic District. The only testimony in the record from cyclists is that this design will not encourage use of the adjacent bikeway. The unprecedented level of vehicle demand on such limited street frontage will block the travel lane, endangering pedestrians and cyclists. As Commissioner Hardesty so aptly noted at the last hearing, the council must acknowledge that people have cars. And the corollary that I would add is that even if you don't own a car, people rely on cars, particularly tourists who will use this hotel and seniors who are attracted to the Pearl District. And the city cannot close its eyes and pretend that this doesn't exist. In sum, this project demands too much activity on a site that lacks adequate capacity. This applicant had choices to protect pedestrians, could have chosen larger family-sized units to reduce demand, could have eliminated the hotel and replaced it with an office building that would better share limited road capacity and frontage. These are choices that the applicant did not make and must make in order to satisfy the design guidelines. For these reasons, I urge you to uphold the appeal and deny the application. My apologies for going over a little bit. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? And I do not see any at this particular juncture. Thank you for the presentation. Next up, we will hear from supporters of the appellant. In other words, if what you just heard is something you support, this is your time to speak, 3 minutes each. Keelan will call your name and let you know when your 3 minutes is up.
First up, we have Rita Seilen.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Great, thank you. Mayor Wheeler and City Council members, my name is Rita Seilen and I've lived at 416 Northwest 13th Avenue in the Historic District for 21 years. Thank you for allowing us to express our opposition to this 23-story mixed-use development, which meets the guidelines without considering livability or vehicular risks. Just because we can do something does not mean we should do it. While legal, according to code, specifically the 2035 plan, which was passed when life was very different, the overarching public policy or effects on livability of a community that this development will have on citizens have thus far never been given serious consideration. Setbacks and water treatments don't affect livability or vehicular risks to pedestrians and cyclists. 271 units, that's hotel and apartments, with no parking facilities, not even valet parking, at a time in national and local history when Amazon, UPS, grocery deliveries, and others are at an all-time high with no hint of future reversal. The congestion of people, autos, and bicycles is seemingly ignored. Yes, we need more housing in Portland and in the Pearl, sure. Affordable housing. The Pearl is home to 7 low-rise buildings devoted to affordable housing of good neighbors. Let's encourage development on this site of another low-rise affordable housing building. In the South Pearl alone, there are presently two major Mill Creek apartment developments with over 500 apartment units, of which less than 20% are leased in spite of significant financial incentives. Maybe these could be convertible to affordable housing units for families facing eviction. And these buildings have impressive parking facilities, getting cars off the streets. The Akoya with 291 units offers 223 vehicle spaces. The Gossamer with 204 units offers 145 vehicle spaces. Outside the Mill Creek developments, the Rodney, also new, with 230 units offers 206 vehicle spaces. There has never been an application for a development in the Pearl for a building with more than 60 residential units that did not offer on-site parking, except the Hyatt Place development on a quarter lot with only one street access. I respectfully ask you to give practical consideration to this development and how it will affect every citizen, young and old, resident and tourist, who enjoys the Pearl District in general and the intersection at 12th and Flanders specifically. And I ask you to uphold the appeal and deny the application. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Joseph Mickey.
Welcome.
Joseph, are you able to unmute?
Hello?
Yeah, now we hear you.
I'm so sorry. So did my time start now?
No, now it starts.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe McGee. At the last hearing on this issue, Commissioner Ryan said his initial reaction was that this building was better suited to the North Pearl District. And Commissioner Hardesty said her gut reaction was that it wasn't a good fit for the site. Those reactions were spot on and consistent with the reasons so many of us oppose this development. Neither 12th nor Flanders is much bigger than the average residential street. The Hyatt Lawson project would plant 271 vertical residences at this small crossroads. That same intersection is the midpoint of the long-planned, much-anticipated Flanders Greenway that will connect the waterfront with the West Hills and include the new $10 million Flanders Crossing Bridge, which will be lifted into place over I-405 next weekend. The bridge is just three blocks away from the Hyatt location. The Greenway and bridge have continually been touted as part of a safe, low-stress passage for cyclists and pedestrians by PBOT in many electronic and written communications over many months. Safe and low stress, the words of PBOT. To allow a vehicle-intensive megastructure to be built at this intersection will potentially destroy, or at least greatly diminish, the promise and intent of these long-planned and long-awaited public investments. Where is the city's commitment to Vision Zero? What about the many words routinely offered up about pedestrian and cyclist safety? Remember, it's the actions that matter, not the words. If this project gets built, I predict there will be a lot of legitimate public outrage when people realize what choices were made that compromised their community infrastructure assets by placement of a traffic magnet at a critical intersection on the Greenway. I also think the city faces potential liability when there are injuries or deaths as a result of allowing an overly intensive use at this Greenway intersection with foreseeable impacts on safety. I call on you to be good stewards of our public investments and to put our interests above those of out-of-town developers pushing the outer limits of zoning rules and site capacity without regard for neighborhood impacts and safety. Let's not be so desperate for development that we end up with something that doesn't solve any of our urban problems, but only compounds them. The mayor likes to call this a marquee project, but calling it that doesn't make it one. It's just repeating developer hype. This is just another generic high-rise. I think it will end up being seen as a marquee mistake. Post-pandemic, cities will have more and bigger challenges than ever before. The South Pearl is one of our city's greatest strengths. If ever there was a time to play to your strengths and not undercut them, this is it. I urge you to decline to approve this project. It does not enhance the public good. It detracts from it. Surely we can do better. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Patricia Cliff.
Welcome.
Okay, can I be heard?
Yep, loud and clear.
Great, thank you. I'd like to start by congratulating you on your elections. I'd like to start by congratulating you on your elections and wish you good health and much success in dealing with the multiple challenging issues facing the city of Portland and the country at this time. I come to you today as a resident of the South Pearl and the president of the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity and Design, an affiliation of residents and business owners promoting livability, historic preservation, affordable housing, and quality design throughout the Pearl District. For 2.5 years, residents of the Pearl have in large numbers articulately and vehemently voiced their valid objections to the proposed Vibrant Cities Hyatt Place and Lawson Residence development to the Design Commission, the Bureau of Development Services, and the City Council at a prior hearing. I trust that you and your staff have been apprised of these, so I'll limit myself to saying that PNID concurs with all of the objections raised by our legal counsel and by those who have individually articulated their own strong opinions. During this 2.5 year period, there has been no attempt by the developer to engage PNID or the community in any meaningful reduction in the height or density of this out of context super tall edifice with two distinctly different primary uses, a 160 unit hotel and 131 studio and one bedroom small apartments with no on-site parking on a 10,000 square foot site. In the intervening 2 years, 2.5 years since the project was first reviewed by the Design Commission, much has changed, making this development even more unsuitable for this location than when it was originally proposed. Since March 2020, with the onset of COVID-19 and the lockdown resulting in the increased rate of viral infections, many distressed businesses have failed, especially the local restaurant and retail businesses. The physical destruction of downtown by out-of-control political demonstrations has spilled over into the South Pearl. At the beginning of 2021, our formerly wonderful city finds itself in a state of turmoil, a daily humanitarian crisis brought about by the growing homeless population, increased street crime, shootings and homicides, the highest number of traffic deaths in 25 years, boarded up and graffiti covered retail stores and underused office, vacant office space, along with a devastated tourist industry with many shuttered hotels and a 30% occupancy rate of those that struggle to remain open. All of these factors have led to a seriously diminished livability factor, with formerly happy urban dwellers fleeing further from the inner city to the suburbs, leaving behind a large number of unrented studio and one bedroom market rate apartments, while the growing need for family appropriate affordable housing remains unaddressed. The philosophical question that I would like to pose to the City Council today concerns the role that the new city government, how the new city government sees itself playing in this vastly changing urban environment that we are experiencing. Will the city government bend to the demands of real estate developers who are non-responsive to the needs of the community as previous administrations have done? Or will the serious public policy, health issues, and livability concerns of their constituents take preference? As many of these issues which plague Portland and other cities in this pandemic period, I concur with my good friend Fareed Zakaria's insightful remarks. Those cities that use the pandemic as an opportunity to make long overdue changes will rebound. Those that handle the crisis badly will get mired in a downward spiral. When the cities decline, most often they do so for the same reasons that countries decline: bad government and mismanagement, not some broad structural trend against cities. It is my greatest hope that Portland's newly elected government will take this to heart and give serious thought to livability and public policy issues affecting the residents of this district and citywide, which should be weighted above the purely pecuniary interests of an out-of-town developer who has chosen to push the outer limits of zoning to the detriment of our community. Thank you for the attention to this matter. I request that you deny the developer's application.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Carolyn Wheatley.
Welcome, Carolyn.
Am I on now?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah. I am Carolyn Wheatley. Hello, congratulations, and thank you. I live directly across Flanders from the entire Flanders section of this proposed. I'm on the fourth floor of the McKenzie. I have sent letters regarding the nightmare transportation that residents see in this neighborhood. But now, as a result of the pandemic, I'm even more concerned about not just traffic congestion, but people congestion. When we do know, we've talked about empty spaces and high rises and so on, but you are asked not just to consider the hotel, but the 11 to 12 story apartments at the top of this building from the 11th to the 22nd floor and way above the ground, not easily reached fast with no green spaces. So we know that density now is an issue. We know that social distancing is an issue. So I'm asking you, how can all these people stuffed into those floors, those units with narrow halls, narrow stairways, from 11 to 23 stories above the ground, access the ground if they need to, try to stay alone, try to isolate in an elevator. They have separate entrance, they have their separate elevator. It would be very difficult to ever be completely alone in that situation. And then where do they go? So I've done the math on this. In the neighborhood here, we have over 600 people within 50 to 100 feet block of five condo and apartment buildings. 600 people with four underground parking garages with many hundred cars too. So you add that to 1,700 people and you have, I mean to 1,300, 700 plus the 600, you have 1,300 residents and in and out every day, 24/7 hotel guests. Now let's add several more categories. Number one is visitors to these residents every day. Give it another 100. Restaurant customers in the proposed restaurant in this hotel. Give it another maybe 50. Bicycles, scooters, wheelchairs, pedestrians, walkers, all trying to move through a one block area and on the new bikeway. Bicycles will cut across. They won't even use it at some times, which defeats the original purpose of a smooth bikeway. This building will take the sun from this area 5 hours a day. So it starts to turn it into a dark canyon along the greenway. So if you add up visitors, you add up restaurant, bicycles, maybe 100 a day. Now you go patrons, we have small businesses all through at the street level. So give it maybe 100 people are shopping here. They're already having trouble finding parking for our businesses and our businesses are suffering. Then you add the big one, the commercial traffic. Of all the drivers, of all the people, the mail, the UPS, the FedEx, the Amazons, but also the laundry trucks, the cleaning trucks, the moving vans. You're talking about another maybe 100 people a day sitting in deliveries, takeout orders. So when you add that up, I actually come up with 1,750 people on this corner within 50 feet for those of us who are directly across from that front door and up to a block going east and west. So I ask, at this moment, police, fire trucks, ambulances use this street. They absolutely couldn't. So thank you for listening to me. That's my primary concern. Tourism, yes, is down. Business is down. The future is home work units. It's not little tiny apartments, and it's not crowding in. Our governor gets upset about 50 people at one place. What is going to happen with 1,750 every day? So thank you for listening to me. It's the wrong building, the wrong time, and absolutely the wrong site. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Toby Travis.
Good afternoon.
Next up, we have Rosamond Graham.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you. Sound loud and clear.
My name is Rosamond Graham, and I live in the Pearl. And I think that I've seen many things change in the 15 years that I've lived here. I think the South Pearl and the commission should help to retain its sort of special character of small, independently owned shops and businesses, art galleries, cafes, restaurants, and bars. The Pearl attracted me when I moved here because it reminded me of Georgetown area in Washington, D.C., a city I lived in for over 30 years. The Pearl has changed in those 15 years. Increasing rents have driven out some stores. But new redevelopment makes it much, much harder for independent businesses to stay in the area. I think you should encourage and help retain that kind of special area of the South Pearl. Specifically, why not the 300 block? I think you've been told it is a very short block. The garages of two buildings, the 16-story Casey condo and the 12-story Oakwood apartments, open onto 12. To add a 12-story hotel with additional 11 stories of studio and one-bedroom apartments, all with entrances on 12th Avenue, will create a terrible congestion, especially since Flanders is becoming a bikeway, and especially with no underground parking. So again, I just say, just because you can issue this permit, it doesn't mean you should. I'm not against development or tall buildings, but this is not the place for one. Thank you.
Thank you.
The last person signed up is Ezra Robbie.
Welcome, Ezra.
Okay, got me?
Yep.
Okay. City Commissioners, Honorable Mr. Mayor, my name is Ezra Rabi. I'm a physician with a medical specialty degree from the American Board of Preventive Medicine, subspecializing in the field of occupational and environmental medicine. I wrote a letter to you previously, which was incorporated into the records regarding my objection to the Hyatt project on medical safety grounds. The central point was that by stacking and packing as many people per square foot as possible, as proposed, creates a cauldron of super spreader potential. That warning is all the more prescient and frightening with the recent dramatic increase in morbidity and mortality as a result of COVID-19, now complicated by more virulent strains which add further stress to the medical resources and society in general. In my previous testimony, I asked that you take a step back and consider current building codes and regulations to accommodate and mitigate such a contagion risk. One cannot ignore the simple scientific fact that a major shortcoming of increasing density is its greater susceptibility to disease spread. This is not a new concept. In fact, zoning laws have been around for over 100 years, largely with the prevention of disease in mind. But there's still hope if we heed the risk and get ahead of the potential disease threat starting now. As I speak to you today, there are already land use laws and local zoning initiatives afoot around the world. For example, China has embarked on a massive planning effort just outside Beijing, embedded around the fundamental principle of social distancing and mitigation of disease spread. How? By substantially increasing the square footage allocated to common areas such as elevators, hallways, stairwells, lobbies, fitness rooms, and cafeterias. To further control disease transmission, they've incorporated such building materials as non-porous hard floors, unlike carpeting, which can retain viral particles for days. In addition, reconfigured HVAC ducting, fresh air intake, and improved filtration systems are being implemented. Such things as automatic doors, voice-activated elevators, cell phone-controlled hotel room entry, hands-free light switches, and temperature controls also add a measure of safety. We've learned some very hard lessons this past year. It's incumbent upon us not to let time run out on further prevention by taking proactive rather than reactive steps. We must be patient and thoughtful in how we design and implement our new urban footprint rather than moving forward with old and outdated standards with which this Hyatt project was unfortunately conceived. In addition, we must rethink the risk-reward calculation of progressive urban density. Portland has been a leader in innovative architecture and forward planning for a long time. Let's not relinquish that position. Your vision will ultimately determine the viability of this city we want. And surely community safety would be at the forefront of all your decisions. In that light, I request that you deny this petition. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that completes testimony.
Very good. This is an opportunity then, if the applicant would like to make a rebuttal to any of the testimony that was put into the record, the applicant has that opportunity at this time.
Good afternoon. My name is Renee France. I am land use counsel for the applicant and will provide the rebuttal. I have a short amount of time, so I'm going to move fairly quickly here. I'm happy to answer any questions at the end. Note again that there is a single approval criteria for the application that is pending before you today, and that is compliance with the applicable design guidelines. Much of the testimony provided was not related to those design guidelines. I would also note that most of the recommendations of things that could or should have been done differently relate primarily to density and use on the site and not to design. The appellant's representative noted that there are currently no buildings that are 23 stories tall in this area. And that is true in the Pearl. And that is because there was an increase in the heights permitted through the Central City 2035 project. And this building is consistent with those increased heights. And this is the exact type of dense multimodal development envisioned by the Central City 2035 plan. I would also note that the guidelines did not require incorporation of the bikeway. I do believe, and the Design Commission found, that this building activates the Flanders Street bikeway, but the level of interaction that is indicating that the appellants have indicated is required by the guidelines is not supported by the guidelines themselves. As I said, the Design Commission found that the design provided along Flanders with an active cafe area will provide activity to that area in a way that doorways would not. I would also note that those in opposition both raise concerns that there will be no on-site parking and argue that it's a vehicle intensive use. While not directly related to the design guidelines, I do note that not providing parking will encourage alternative modes of transportation that is ideal along a bikeway and greenway and will facilitate efficient use of existing parking in the area for those that do travel to the site by motor vehicle. In closing, you have before you a project with uses allowed outright in the zone that satisfies all development standards, that has undergone many, many revisions through a multi-year design review process, and that the Design Commission has twice unanimously found complies with the applicable design guidelines. For these reasons, and for the other reasons identified in the voluminous record of this case, we respectfully request that you deny the appeal and affirm the Design Commission's recommendation following remand.
Thank you. Unless anybody has any questions right now, we'll move right into the appellant rebuttal, should they so choose. They also have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Again, for the record, my name is Carrie Richter. I represent Pearl Neighbors for Integrity and Design. Just to wrap up, I think that what the applicants have said is that we satisfy the design guidelines. And I think that our response to that is this application does not, because it asks too much. It asks too much of a site that cannot accommodate it. And I want to point out, guideline again, A51 says, reinforce special areas, enhance the qualities that make each area distinctive. The bikeway makes the area distinctive. and the improvements, the provision of a cafe versus providing windows doesn't do anything to the bikeway, particularly because there is no short-term bicycle parking on site. So my friends, when I'm a resident there, cannot park so that we can enjoy the cafe together. And that is what violates guideline A5.1. A5.1.1 says design buildings which provide a unified monolithic tripartite composition, base, middle, top, with distinct cornice lines to acknowledge the historic building fabric. The top has to acknowledge the historic building fabric because that's the part you can see from the historic district. Guideline B2 says protect the pedestrian. The obligation here is protection. You must define what it means to protect a pedestrian. And compression at the levels that the testimony presented today does not protect the pedestrian in any sense. Commissioner Robinson talked about context as an obligation to look at future context. I would say respectfully to her that it's not the future context, it's the context today. It's the values that the Pearl District is known for today. We have to reflect that. We cannot just absorb this building because the zoning says that you get 23 stories. You get 250 feet, but only if you satisfy the guidelines. And this building, though a better design, does not go far enough to satisfy those requirements. So I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, provide any clarification. If not, I urge you to uphold this appeal and deny this application. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And at this point, I will ask if there's questions for staff before we close the evidentiary record. Does anybody have questions? Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I did have a question for staff in regard to the question about movement of bicycles. Right, we talked about the entry for residents, and I just wanted to see if staff wanted to respond to that question.
So, Commissioner, are you asking me about the response to the Flanders Greenway, or are you?
No, I'm sorry. So the building has a separate entrance for residents, and my understanding is that they will carry their bikes through that separate entrance. And one of the people who appealed said that they did not think that it would be safe for residents to actually be able to maneuver around, because I think they have to maneuver around a desk in order to get to the elevator.
So that's a great question. So that actually was a change that evolved in the design, and Commissioner Robinson might be able to help me out with this. I'm just trying to remember some of the design iterations, but let me start by saying this. The building did respond to the Flanders Greenway early, and this is kind of building up to answering your question. And so one way that it responded, which was big, and PBOC, who's also here, can kind of attest to this as well, is that initially the required on-site loading for the project was located off of Flanders. Right. And so that, you could argue, had a number of kind of like negative effects to that that facade, that, you know, the pedestrian realm, the way that they interacted with the greenway and so on. And so that was moved around to 12th. So in an earlier design, there was the residential entrance off of 12th. Then if you're kind of magically floating south on that building elevation, there was the on-site loading, which had been moved over there from Flanders. And then there was a separate bike entrance. And a lot of the feedback that we got, because we all ride bikes, we all, you know, bike commute, a lot of people pointed out early that was a more uncomfortable situation, basically having those two entrances and having to cross that on-site loading. And so it was really a direction that was, it wasn't just kind of randomly sort of altered. It was a specific thing that was discussed. And so that entrance was incorporated in the pedestrian entrance so that basically cyclists could go in at one point, not have to cross that loading, which was perceived as possibly dangerous. Other than that, carrying your bike in and going up or down in an elevator to for required on-site bike parking is a pretty standard situation. And again, Commissioner Robinson might be able to add a little bit of a polish to that.
Commissioner Robinson.
Yeah, I really remember it the same as you, that the really big concern was having bicyclists having to cross a loading zone to get to a separate door. And so consolidating the residential entry with the bike entry made a lot more sense. It also eliminated some of the doors, right? Because this is a small lot. It's not a whole block, it's like a quarter of a block. And so there's only so much elevation to kind of get all of those uses in there. And it was a better response to the design to kind of consolidate some of those instead of have a separate door for every use that was interior.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was the only outstanding question that I had. Thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any other questions? And we can move in discussion after we close the record, but I want to make sure if anybody has questions of staff, they have an opportunity to ask them now. Does anybody on the council have objections to me closing the evidentiary record before we move to discussion?
No.
Very good. Then the evidentiary record in this hearing is now closed. That means the council will accept no more oral or written testimony on this land use appeal. And so that I will call for council discussion and when anyone is ready, I will also entertain a motion. So I guess I'll jump off just by way of council discussion. These land use hearings are always challenging.
Yes.
And they're challenging because people make great points. There's a balancing of the great points as people have heard that, you know, the work of the council during a hearing such as this is relatively narrow. There were a lot of issues that were raised, many of which I empathize with and some that I vehemently agree with, that are best resolved outside of a narrow land use hearing. I agree that this is a question about compliance with the applicable design guidelines. And I want to thank the commission for actually taking up this issue again. We didn't give you a choice, we remanded it to you, but I appreciate the spirit in which the commission dove into the project and did additional work. Chandra, I want to thank you and your colleagues for taking that additional effort. I'm always mindful of the fact you are not paid employees of the city of Portland. You are citizen volunteers and you're doing your level best and bringing your expertise and your perceptions to the table to resolve these thorny conflicts alongside of us. And I was not involved, obviously, in the iterations between when we remanded it and the product that came back to the council, but my personal view is that you heard the council, that you took into account the council's feedback, and I just want to really reiterate that I appreciate that. I also want to acknowledge some of what was raised in the testimony. You know, I was born and raised in this city, and I remember when the Pearl District was a gritty industrial zone. I still remember trains running through the center of what today is a residential zone. And the changes have really been remarkable and at the light of speed in that part of our city. And I also want to acknowledge that constant change can be very frustrating, particularly for people who are living right there. And the Pearl District is very much evolving even as we speak. And I think it's one of the greatest neighborhoods in this city, and I think it will continue to be one of the greatest neighborhoods in this city. But it, like every other neighborhood in the city, is going to continue to feel the pace of change. And you know, I always take a bigger picture look at this. I agree with those who say this is as much a question, you know, 2035 is really a question about the future. And if we believe in protecting wilderness areas and we believe in the urban growth boundary and the idea that we have urban development inside and that we protect our environment and our natural habitat outside, that means the deal that we struck was increased density within the urban growth boundary. Then the question becomes, where do you put that density? You know, nobody's going to say, oh, I really, really want height and density. But the fact of the matter is you need it in order to maintain that balance between a livable environment, an affordable environment, an accessible environment, and protect what makes Oregon so amazing. And for me, I made that decision during 2035 overtly that it would be in the central city core, our transit-oriented corridors, and our town centers. And I am also mindful of the fact that Oregonians and Portlanders love their historic architecture. And one of the great features about the Pearl District has been its protection and of buildings that are left. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of them got demolished during this change, but a lot of them are still there and they are protected and they should be protected. This is adjacent to, but not in, those particular areas. And so we are mindful that it must comply with the design review guidelines. And I appreciate the work that has been done. Not everybody will agree with me that they struck the right balance. People don't have to agree with me, but it's my personal belief that they did. Part of the reason that I supported 2035, in fact, helped be a proponent of 2035, is I want to make sure that Portland continues to be a real city, you know, accessible by everyone. You know, I just got an announcement, weirdly enough, this morning, somebody saying, hey, they just sold their $3.4 million condominium in the Pearl District. And that's great. That means somebody bought a $3.4 million condominium in the Pearl District and will be moving into the Pearl District. So, that, you know, there's still people coming and there's still people going. I'm mindful of the fact that this seems like a very odd time to be building a large anything, given that the economy is at a near standstill, if you're talking about the built environment. But the building that will be here will stand for 100 plus years, is my guess. So we're talking about, you know, three generations forward in terms of what we do here. And the city is going to be a bigger city. Anybody who looks at the demographics predicts that Portland will continue to grow. It will continue to be a good value proposition and an attractive place for people to live, to work, to come and visit. And our city must too evolve to accommodate the reality of future growth. And so it's not always well received, believe me. Again, as somebody who remembers what Portland looked like in the 1960s, I thought growth was substantial in the 90s. And here we are, you know, 25 years later, and nobody could have predicted where the city of Portland would be today. So I believe that this referral, this remand, which has now come back to us, is in compliance with all of the applicable design guidelines. That doesn't mean I think it's perfect. Yeah, I haven't seen the perfect building. Well, maybe I've seen one or two in my lifetime, but it's not perfect, but I think they made a good faith effort to meet those design review guidelines. That's my perspective. Commissioner Hardesty, did you have a comment? Or?
Yes, I did, Mayor. And I wanted to start by thanking the Design Commission for actually doing a really deep dive after we remanded back to you. Really appreciate you doing that. I also want to appreciate the developer making some additional changes based on what he heard at the city council meeting that we had in November, I think it was. All my dates run together now. But I think what's important is I support what you just said, Mayor, which is if I was designing it, I would probably make it look a lot different. And I think that we are compelled to, if it fits the rules, if it is not outside of what our guidelines have been, then I don't see a reason to not support it today. And let me just say that, you know, people are expressing concern about their neighborhoods changing. In my whole 2 years on council, we talked about the RIP, the residential infill project, which also will mean that many other neighborhoods will change as well. I kind of chuckled when I was hearing people say, well, we have a pandemic, so therefore we shouldn't be building small apartment complexes. But I don't know if they've been paying attention. We have small apartment complexes all over the city of Portland with people living in 500 square feet units. So I don't think that that would be a reason why I would not support it. So Mayor, I would propose a motion that we support, we accept the Design Commission's recommendation and approve this application.
I second that.
Let me go ahead and suggest some legal language just because I know our legal counsel is very particular about this. So would it be fair to say your motion is to deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's findings and conditions of approval? And legal counsel, is that the legal way of stating what Commissioner Hardesty put on the record?
Yes, and I would couch it in the form of a tentative approval because it will be coming back for findings later.
So Commissioner Hardesty makes that motion with a minor editing modification. Commissioner Ryan, was that you who seconded it?
Yes, it was.
Commissioner Ryan seconds. Any further discussion? So this is a tentative vote, meaning after we take the vote, it will come back one more time to the City Council and we'll sort that out in a couple of minutes. Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
So this has been a very dense and complex issue, and I want to appreciate all the parties involved and the thorough presentations and information, as well as the numerous residents who've written and called and testified to this issue before. I was here, and my colleague Commissioner Matz was here. The situation we're in as a precedent project also enables us to reflect on how the process went and explore insights that may have surfaced to reflect if our policy application is in alignment with its intent. And these insights are useful for the future. So I really appreciate the diligence of the appellants and the views of those who testify in support of this appeal and care very deeply about their neighborhood and the application of this policy here. I also want to thank the members of the Design Commission, like my colleagues before me, for your work on this as well. These commissions require a significant amount of engagement and hours and commitment, and we're so appreciative of your service. In reading and watching all the available documents and information and tracking the progress of all the suggested changes within the purview of the Design Review Commission, the evidence to me demonstrates that the requirements of the guidelines were met in this case, and the changes recommended were met to better meet the spirit of what our guidelines hope to achieve. That said, I do agree about the number of issues that were raised that need to be looked at that fall outside of the scope, and we need to ensure that that's in alignment to other city plans and other bike and pedestrian issues and concerns that have been set forth prior to this project. And as a new member of council, I commit to working very closely with Commissioner Ryan and his bureau and also my colleagues and other bureau leadership about these outstanding issues and ensure public engagement on these areas of concern moving forward. So I vote aye.
Ryan?
Yes. First of all, thank you, Design Commission and staff, and also the many, many people who have written in and been testifying. The Design Commission reviewed the project against the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines and the River District Design Guidelines, and the project meets those guidelines. I appreciate the points made by the appellants, especially not fitting into the landscape is of the adjacent River District. yep, the design meets the guideline requirements. And I do encourage developers and architects to look closely at their designs and how they fit into the neighborhood. And I do support this at this moment. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
I want to also appreciate both the appellate and the, opponent is the appropriate other side of that, of this project. I appreciate when people lay out what the issues are very directly. I was greatly appreciative that both sides were willing to go back to the design commission and see how they could help make this project better. Is this a perfect project? No. Is this a project that's been in the pipeline for almost 2 years and has checked all the boxes the city requires? Yes. I agree with Commissioner Rubio, however, if we think that we are giving too much, then heaven forbid I say this, but maybe we'll look at do we need to rethink whether or not that height is in fact too high. I don't know the answer to that. I do know that it was hotly debated, and that was where we ultimately landed. But I think we will learn from this project, and maybe that will inform whether or not we have the appetite to go back and revise the rules that we have put in place. I vote aye.
Maps.
I want to thank everyone who presented today. This is a dense and an important project. Before I cast my vote, I want to take a moment to explain my vote. Especially as a new member of City Council, one of the things I realize is that my colleagues and I wear many different hats. Sometimes we have administrative tasks, sometimes we have legislative challenges, and sometimes we have judicial responsibilities. As I understand what's happening here today, what's before us and my role in this process is essentially judicial. The question is not, Mengus, can you make this building better? Instead, the question is, Mengus, does this project comply with design guidelines? I want to reassure all the neighborhood folks that I have heard your concerns. This project is challenging. It is a 23-story tall building in a low-slung historic neighborhood. There's no parking, and I think there's no question that this building will have a huge impact on the character of the neighborhood. These are really important concerns, but I think that the question before us as a council today is slightly different. The question before us today is, does the Hyatt Place proposal comply with design guidelines? And frankly, the evidence that I have seen today suggests that it does. But this does, I want to point out, leave us with a paradox and a puzzle. We have a building which complies with our design guidelines, but at the same time raises deep concerns amongst residents. I think as a city council, we should be sensitive to that. I see no way for me not to vote in favor of this proposal because it complies with design guidelines, but I also would urge my colleagues and all the city planners on this call to think about whether or not the guidelines are working the way we hope they will. That's why I hope that we can continue this discussion as we take up the design overlay zone amendment project in the future. There, what I hope we can do is to ask a question about how we go about balancing the principles of smart growth while also respecting the character and livability of our communities. I pledge my commitment to participating in that discussion and taking it seriously. I hope that we've learned something from this project and can use it to make the whole city better. And that's why I am voting aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. I gave my speech earlier. The council has voted 5-0 on a tentative basis to deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's findings and conditions of approval. At this point, I would ask the council clerk and the city attorney, do we have a date and a time certain for this matter to return to council for a final vote and adoption of findings?
We do, Mayor. I conferred with the representatives of both parties ahead of time, and we've decided to come back on February 10th at 9:45 a.m. for adoption of findings. The applicant will begin that process and we'll be back to you in just under 4 weeks.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you to everybody who testified today. Appreciate it. Our next item this afternoon is a proclamation, item number 31.
Proclaim January 18, 2021 to be Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Colleagues, Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a time of both reflection as well as action. I think we can all agree we're living in a different moment in history than Dr. King experienced in the 1960s, yet we're witnessing many of the same truths Dr. King so eloquently shared decades ago. Race still remains a predictor of how long and how well someone lives in the United States. And our nation's foundation of racism and injustice continues to shape many of our public and private systems and structures. Those systems and structures support and sustain inequitable outcomes, especially for Black people. And as we learn from Dr. King's sermons and his marches, we must find ways to come together to create a better future for all of us. As Dr. King said so eloquently, hate begets hate. Violence begets violence. Toughness begets a greater toughness. We must counter the forces of hate with the power of love. It's up to all of us to dispel fiction with fact, to use words and not weapons, and to be driven by love rather than hate as we create our shared future together. We must be purposeful as we work towards creating lasting change. And I certainly begin this new year more determined than ever for everyone to be part of this change, to be part of this important evolution. We all benefit when we succeed in achieving Dr. King's legacy. And we all benefit from the vision and the work of the civil rights movement that he helped to build and to lead. So it's our opportunity to build on this legacy together. It's at this point, I would ask my colleagues if they have any remarks that they would like to make, and then Commissioner Mapps will read the proclamation on behalf of the Portland City Council. Looks like you're up, Commissioner Mapps. Now, Commissioner Hardison jumped in right there on the deadline. Commissioner Hardison, thank you.
See, I think they were just all waiting for me to go first. That's I know this routine. Let me just say that Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday has always been a day on. It's normally a day that I would start my day at the Scanner breakfast, acknowledging the good work of many community-based organizations and many fabulous students who are seeking higher education. And then I would go to the Dr. Martin Luther King program that traditionally, well, it's moved a lot, but the last decade or so, it's been at Highland Church on Northeast Gleason and 62nd. Of course, this year, because of COVID, we won't be meeting in person for those events, but those events will continue to take place. But I've also spent my Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and this is what I have found most exhilarating, is talking to young people and reminding them that young people have always been at the forefront of every movement that we've had in this country. And they have been able to go places their parents could only imagine. So for me, it's really important, especially this Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. birthday, is to really reflect on his message and his work around nonviolent direct action. I am a child of his era. I grew up believing in nonviolent direct action, speaking truth to power in a way that was nonviolent. What we've seen over the last year has clearly shown that the work of Dr. King has not been completed. During his, just before his death, Dr. King shifted his focus to a laser focus on economic prosperity. And that was a good move. Unfortunately, he died before he was able to realize that dream. What COVID has taught us is that every single system we have is flawed. Every single public system we have has racially disparate outcomes. It's ironic for me too, as I looked at what happened at the Capitol last Wednesday and looked back and reflected on all the civil rights marches that I watched on the new colored TV when I was a kid, reinforced for me why people that look like me died for the right to vote. Why people that look like me died so they could live in whatever neighborhood they wanted to live in. Why people that look like me wanted to be able to get an education. The fact that even today, your health outcomes are determined by your race lets us know just how much work is really left to be done. And so, in honor and in recognition of the decades and decades of nonviolent direct action, I am recommitting myself today to continue that tradition that I've lived my entire life. It won't be different, but it's just a recommitment to nonviolent direct action to fundamentally change racist institutions so they work for us all. Thank you.
Commissioner Rubio. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. And thank you to my fellow commissioners and to the mayor for leading the charge on bringing this important proclamation before council. I'm very honored to be here for this today. I'm also very proud to be here as a testament of Dr. King's legacy. For so many of us have not just been students of his example, but also quite literally able to be where we are because of the movement for justice that continues to this day. And for many of us, our parents and grandparents and ancestors are part of this story that enables us to be here. And the events of the past week and this past year have told us that we must continue to push for the changes that we want to see, to acknowledge the harmful role that white supremacy and injustice have played in our institutions, in order to truly become a truly inclusive and representative nation and community that values the experiences and liberation of every person, and particularly the liberation of Black lives. The words of Dr. King are needed more than ever before, and like Commissioner Hardesty, it motivates me to double down on my commitment to racial and social justice. And I wanna thank the mayor and Commissioner Hardesty and Commissioner Mapps for bringing this proclamation forward. But also acknowledge you, Commissioner Hardesty, not only for your leadership on this council on racial justice, but also for your advocacy in this community long before your time on council. So it's an honor for me to sit here as the first Latinx commissioner in our city's history and participate in this important proclamation today, and especially in these times of change.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Commissioner Ryan.
Yes. Thank you, colleagues, and thank you for bringing this proclamation forth and allowing the opportunity to reflect on the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. I also really appreciate listening to Commissioner Hardesty talk about how one spends this day when you've lived in Portland for a long time. I was bouncing around thinking of the different locations of the celebration after the breakfast that we would attend. This year, I'm actually focusing on two things. Personally, when I think of a day on and the respect for the life and legacy of Martin Luther King. And one is the impact that COVID's had on education, our students throughout the region, throughout our city. In my previous roles before the council, I would focus quite a bit on racial equity with education, really looking at those gaps. And every summer, The summer learning loss is real. Those with a lot of resources at home tend to be just fine, and those that live in conditions that don't have access to technology, don't have access to enrichment, don't have those private resources, suffer. And so because they're not seeing their teachers every day, the good teachers, they tend to fall behind. Ever since COVID's began, I can't stop thinking about those kids. I can't stop thinking about those children, many of color, many in poverty, that are in conditions at home that aren't allowing them to keep pace. And that worries me. And I don't think it gets enough attention. That's why I wanted to bring that up today. The second one is similar to what I've been hearing from my other colleagues, and that is a real focus this year on nonviolence. That was the legacy of Martin Luther King, who studied Gandhi. And I can't think of a better time for all of us here locally and nationally to really give that civility an opportunity to really be lifted up. We're going to agree to disagree. We get to do it with creative tension, with dialogue. And the recent acts of violence and darn right selfish behavior, when someone just doesn't have your pure point of view, is really concerning. And so I just hope that as we lean into an inauguration week that is coupled with Martin Luther King Day about every 4 years, this is such an important year for us to demonstrate how much we all uphold nonviolence as a way of doing our action and making our point of view. Anyway, I'm grateful to be a part of a very diverse city council. It's an honor to work with all of you. And it's I'm grateful that we took a moment and reflected upon the life of Dr. Martin Luther King at this time. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Ryan. And at this point, we'll turn it over to Commissioner Mapps for any comments he has, plus he'll do the honor of please reading the proclamation on behalf of all of us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, colleagues. I appreciate this opportunity to speak and to read this important proclamation. Here's why. Martin Luther King's birthday is deeply personal to me. I'm on council today because of the sacrifices made by Dr. King. You know, Portland was founded 169 years ago, and in all of that time, only 4 Black people have been elected to Portland City Council. I'm one of them, Commissioner Hardesty is another, and of course before us there was Dick Bogle and Charles Jordan. Now, the emergence of Black office holding in Portland is both a sign of how far we've come and a sign of how much work is left to be done. And in addition, I'll point out that 92 years after Martin Luther King's birth, his message of nonviolence is more important than ever. Recently, our nation and our city have been transformed by violence. Just a few days ago, a mob stormed and captured our nation's capital, leaving 5 people dead. I'll remind everyone that something very similar happened just last month in our state's state capital. And now here in Portland, on nearly a nightly basis, bands of vandals sweep through neighborhoods where they break windows, tag buildings, and use violence in order to achieve their political aims. Now, let me be clear. I support everyone's right to protest. That's part of my job as a city commissioner. And I want to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart who's out there demanding civil rights and justice. I am literally here today because of your commitment to social justice. But at the same time, I want to ask people who commit acts of political violence and vandalism to please stop. Violence is not helpful. In fact, your violence hurts. Violence just fuels more violence. And the only way to break the vicious cycle of violence is to choose peace. So Portland and colleagues, please join me in celebrating Dr. King's life and his legacy, peace. And with that, I'd like to read the following proclamation. Whereas Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. devoted his life to advancing equality, social justice, and opportunity for all, and challenged all Americans to participate in the never-ending work of building a more perfect union. And whereas Dr. King's teaching can continue to guide and inspire us in addressing challenges in our community, and whereas the King Holiday and Service Act enacted in 1994 designated the King Holiday as a national day of volunteer service and charged the Corporation for National and Community Services with leading this effort, and whereas since 1994, millions of Americans have been inspired by the life and work of Dr. King to serve their neighborhoods and their communities on the King Holiday, and whereas serving on the King Holiday is an appropriate way to honor Dr. King, meet local and national needs, bring citizens together, and strengthen our community and nation. And whereas the King Day of Service is the only federal holiday commemorated as a national day of service and offers an opportunity for Americans to give back to their communities on the holiday and make an ongoing commitment to service throughout the year. And whereas 2020 showed us that we have not yet realized the teachings of Dr. King and his goal of creating an equitable society. And whereas the pandemic of 2020 has shown us that racial inequality continues in both policymaking, economic outcomes, and in all levels of government. And whereas the protest of 2020 called for a reimagining of community safety, a more just and equitable police force, and a greater degree of police accountability. And whereas the law enforcement response to the insurrection that took place in our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, proves the inequitable treatment of law enforcement towards BIPOC communities. And whereas the city of Portland today reaffirms our commitment to the teachings and principle of Dr. King, and the city encourages all Portlanders to engage in fighting for a more just Portland. And whereas, with all of this in mind, we call on all Portlanders to hold us accountable to the dream of Dr. King. And the resolution of this council passed on June 17th, 2020, where the council commented, quote, are committed to being an anti-racist institution and continues to prioritize and addressing anti-Blackness and celebrating Black resilience within the city's workforce and entire community. Now I, Mingus Maps, City Commissioner of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim January 18th, 2021 to be Martin Luther King Jr. Day in Portland and encourage all residents to observe the day. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Maps, for reading that. We appreciate it. And we have a second proclamation on our agenda as well today. Keelan, could you please read item 32?
Proclaim the second week of January 2021 to be Slavic and Eastern European Heritage Week.
Colleagues, I'm pleased to bring forth this proclamation on behalf of the City Council, which celebrates our Slavic and Eastern European community members who enrich our collective Portland home. This year, for the first time, we're going to hear the proclamation read in both English and Russian. Don't worry, I will not be reading it. I would like to introduce Natasha Hounsberger. She is from the Portland Police Bureau's Community Service Division. Natasha, thank you for being here. Why don't you please take it away?
Good afternoon, Mayor and respective commissioners. Thank you, Mayor, for introducing me. My name is Natasha Hounsberger. I'm here as a founding member of the Slavic Empowerment Team, also known as SET, and the Slavic Advisory Council. SET is part of Diverse Empowered Employees of Portland, and this is our fourth annual proclamation. We are proud to take a moment to honor and uplift members of the Slavic and Eastern European community living in the Portland greater area. We are here to give a voice to this unique and beautiful culture that makes our city more diverse and empowered. I want to thank Tamara Burkovskaya for translating the proclamation into Russian. Today we have three speakers, including myself, that are going to share their stories. I will start with my story, introduce the other two speakers right after. Thank you for recognizing and culturally honoring Slavic and Eastern European community. This week is a very meaningful week for me. It reminds me to reflect on a unique part of my past as I continue to define myself and come to terms with my cultural growth and identities. I promise I won't sound like a heroine from Tolstoy's War and Peace. However, it is exceptionally challenging to present my community of former Yugoslav republics, my home Republic of Croatia, without a due mention of our turbulent history. I was born and raised in Yugoslavia, located in the Balkan region of South Europe. Its name translates to the Union of the South Slavs, Serbs, Croats, and Slovenians. However, it was an ethnic and religious union comprised of many more ethnic groups and identities, coexisting until 1991, when we had a civil war and that led to ethnic conflict and genocides. For your awareness, many of our Portland Yugoslav families came here in the 1990s as war refugees seeking safety and stability, and you all welcomed them. So thank you for that. It is somewhat ironic that it wasn't until I emigrated to Portland in 2001, in my late 20s, that I became acutely aware of my heritage. It took a period of many colors of nostalgia to embrace the vacancy in my heart and mind, and a time painful longing for the known and home. It's a typical human response to long for food and regional cuisine and traditional family Sunday meals and gatherings, which remain to be focal point of my memories. It is the longing for walking down a childhood street, going to a cemetery with my mom to pay a tribute on All Souls Day, celebrating two Christmases and two Easters in the most lavish culinary display that I miss the most. But what I'm proud the most and grateful most about my culture and heritage is the life experience and ability to successfully navigate turbulent socio-political environments. Surviving a civil war teaches you many life skills. It provides you life wisdom and guidance to better understand human nature, conflict, and so much more appreciate value and fight for peace, unity, and tolerance. While my heart starts beating faster when an airplane lands in Croatia, I also experience a thrilling, alive feeling of returning to Portland and my life here. Visiting home country is a matter of celebrating and reliving the past, but coming back is an acceptance of my present and my future. Coming back reminds me of our shared values, goals, dreams, and vulnerabilities. All I can do is apply my life experience and knowledge to serving my community as a police officer in hopes that we persevere our turbulent times and come together in creating our pathways for unity and coexistence. I'm utterly grateful to Erko Slavic House and PPB Slavic Advisory Council for allowing me to learn, grow, feel, and experience many of our Slavic East European cultures and traditions, and simply to keep the cultural flame burning. Thank you for listening to my story. And next speaker is Ms. Alexandra Ferchuk. She's an auditor from the City Auditor's Office and a founding member of the Slavic Empowerment Team.
Thank you.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, my name is Alexandra Ferchuk, and thank you for having me here today to represent the Slavic and Eastern European community. I have devoted my professional career to public service, working in state and local government. The last 10 years, I've worked as performance auditor for the elected city auditor here in Portland. And before that, I served in the Oregon Secretary of State Audits Division. I have evaluated a variety of public services, ranging from juvenile justice programs at the state to the allocation of cannabis tax and even regulation of short-term rental industry here in Portland. I have served on the board of the Association of Local Government Auditors, and I'm a strong advocate of government performance auditing and government transparency and accountability. Now, this is a long way from the totalitarian and oppressive government in the former Czechoslovakia where I was born. I was 11 years old when my family escaped to Austria and then on to Switzerland. My mother had the courage and determination to leave the country with my younger brother and I. The Czechoslovak government considered emigrating a crime, so that meant that we could not return or even visit our relatives. After receiving assistance from an immigrant organization and living in immigrant refugee camps, we settled in Switzerland. But we didn't receive political asylum in Switzerland, and so we decided to go to the United States. So in 1986, with the assistance of the US government and an immigrant organization, we boarded a plane that was full of Eastern European and Soviet immigrants, and eventually we made it to Portland, Oregon. Arriving in Portland, we only had a couple thousand dollars, few pieces of luggage, and we did not speak English. At that time, it was IRCO, the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, and the Czech interpreter provided by IRCO who helped us get settled. This was a very challenging time, as you can imagine, and having an organization like IRCO really helped us, and it was an enormous benefit for our family. So I want to say that this proclamation today and the City Slavic Empowerment Team are important because they acknowledge our cultures, our stories, and our contributions to the city and this community. Thank you, City Council and the City of Portland, for celebrating the Slavic and Eastern European community. Thank you for making Portland a sanctuary city. And I am thankful to organizations like IRCO that work to ensure that all immigrants are supported and safe in this city. And I also want to take this opportunity to actually publicly thank my mother, since without her courage, I would not be here today working for the elected City of Portland Auditor. Thank you for having me.
Alexander, thank you for telling us your story. That's awesome. And the shout out to your mom is priceless. We're so proud to have you as part of the city team. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioner, please allow me to introduce Mr. Andrei Georgiev. He's a member of Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization and Slavic and Eastern European Center Advisory Council. Andrei.
Thank you, Natasha. Good afternoon, Ted Wheeler and all the commissioners. It's a wonderful opportunity to be with you here at this afternoon. My name is Andrei, as already mentioned. I'm also a local business owner here in Portland, Oregon. I own and run a food cart that serves Slavic dumplings here in Portland. So really love it here. United States is truly the land of opportunity. You know, my family migrated here in 1996 from Ukraine. And the reason for the migration was to find better life, you know, opportunities in business, opportunities in freedom, in religious speech, and really to live the life that my parents and my grandparents really wanted to live. Because back in the Soviet Union, I was born in 1989, which was after the fall of the communist regime in the Soviet Union. And my grandpa used to, you know, back in the day, live in the Soviet Union, and he was an educated man. He was an engineer by trade. And because he converted into Christianity and started having beliefs different than, you know, the Communist Party, and he resigned from the Communistic Party, they didn't allow him to get high-paying jobs. So as an engineer, he had to, you know, switch jobs every often because the director would come to him and say, hey, sorry, we can't get you in the position because we got a letter from the higher-ups and I'm sorry, we have to let you go. He had to move to a different town. You know, within several weeks, they would get a letter and he would have to leave to a different job and so on and on. He would always constantly switch jobs, and entrepreneurship wasn't an option because if you would be an entrepreneur, you were considered a speculator and it would put you to jail for that. So there's a lot of reasons why my family lived here, and this is truly the land of opportunity. And I'm so thankful to be here in the United States of America. You know, when we just moved, my dad actually got his first job thanks to IRCO. They had a panel there, new people would come in there and they would help them find a job. And it's so cool. It turns out that I'm serving on, you know, the Slavic and Eastern European Center there right now. So it's really an honor to pay that forward and help other people. So again, I want to thank city commissioners, the mayor, for making Portland such a beautiful city and so open for the diverse cultures here. And we as a Slavic community from about 150 to 200,000 people here, we're very grateful and thankful. Thank you so much.
Andre, thank you. And you mentioned you run a food cart. Don't hesitate to give a shout out here. That's allowed.
Okay. Yeah, it's called Pelmeni, and we're located on Madison and 10th.
Awesome. And what's the specialty?
So we make Ukrainian dumplings. So there's dumplings with meat and then with vegetarian. And the most famous soup, which is borscht, we serve that as well.
Yes, so. Absolutely. Awesome. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Sorry. You already knew about it. We didn't. Very good. So, and Natasha, that completes your invited guest list. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. There's only reading in Russian and English.
Very good. And so I'll allow the council to make remarks, and then I'm going to read the proclamation in English. And then we have a guest who will help us read the proclamation in Russian. So first I'll ask my colleagues. It looks like Commissioner Mapps has his hand up, and then Commissioner Hardesty.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thanks to everyone who presented today. I'm delighted that council and the community has recognized Slavic and Eastern European Heritage Week here in Portland. This event is very important to me, and let me tell you why. The Slavic and Eastern European story is part of the American story and part of the Portland story. You know, America is a nation of immigrants, and Portland is a city of immigrants. It's important to remember that the original inhabitants of the Portland metro area were Native Americans, the tribes like the Multnomah, Clackamas, and Malala peoples. The rest of us are relatively newcomers, and we have come at various points in history, and we've made a really remarkable city. I think it's important for every Oregonian and Portlander to know that the first European immigrants arrived in Oregon in the 1880s. And today we have around 50,000 Portlanders and Pacific Northwestern folk with roots in Eastern Europe. In fact, Portland has one of the largest Russian-speaking populations in the entire country. And over time, Portlanders with Slavic and Eastern European roots mm-hmm. have made enormous contributions to our neighborhoods, our culture, and our economy. That's why I'd like to encourage every Portlander to explore and patronize our Portland businesses with roots in Eastern Europe. For example, we should check out our friend Andre's food cart downtown. I can't wait to get downtown to check that out. Also, if you haven't been there, please investigate and explore our Roman Russian food store on Division, Good Neighbors Market on 82nd, Russian Elegant Food on 101st in Gleason, and Kachka to Go on Southeast 11th. Awesome contributions to our community. If you haven't been there, you should definitely go check them out. I'd also like to acknowledge all the good works done by organizations in Portland that have worked with our neighbors with roots in Eastern Europe. In particular, I very much admire the work that our staff over at the Office of Civic Life and the Police Bureau have done in reaching out to the Slava community. I also like to acknowledge and celebrate the work done by the City of Portland Slavic Empowerment Team. And of course, ERCO's Slavic and Eastern European Center has made important contributions to our community. Indeed, one of my sadnesses of this moment is one of the things that we'll be doing this time of year is attending ERCO's annual Slavic Center Heritage Celebration. Unfortunately, because of COVID, I do not believe that will be happening this year. I do think there's an online virtual event. I think some of our colleagues might be able to actually clarify that. So look for that online on Thursday, January 28th at 6 p.m. I think there might be food and entertainment and auctions and whatnot. Most of all, I'd just like to encourage all Portlanders to join with me in celebrating Slavic and Eastern European Heritage Week. Now I'm going to try something. Slovim Novum Godum, which is Happy New Year, at least my closest equivalent to it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Commissioner. We hope that's what it meant to. And next up, we have Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Natasha and Alexandra and Audrey. I really appreciate all of Andrew. Sorry, Andrew. Appreciate all of you presenting today. And Commissioner Mapps is absolutely right. I would be eating good food. I'd be listening to some fabulous music. We'd be at ERCO and we'd be creating community. I've done that many years, and every year it just feels like it's all brand new again because of how welcoming everyone is and how beautiful the young people look when they have on their clothing that is very specific to the dancing that they're going to do. So I think we've done a really good job of really embracing the cultural differences that we have that actually make us all unique, and then celebrating them in a very multicultural, multi-ethnic way. I look forward to the day when we can meet in person and not in these little teeny boxes anymore. And I just want to say, I know Natasha, you've done some great work with this community over the years, and it's been wonderful watching how deep those relationships have become. So I'm greatly appreciative of the work that you do and that you're able to bring your whole self to your job. It's been wonderful watching the evolution of this process. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, and thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Natasha and all the others for bringing this important proclamation to Council today. I'm honored to support the proclamation, recognizing the tremendous contributions of your community and your growing community, making up 20% of Portland's population, and very vital to the work that we're doing to build community together. And as a daughter and granddaughter of immigrants, a key value and a key priority for me is to support and promote inclusive policies, inclusive work, and partnerships that help immigrant and refugee communities thrive. And I also want to acknowledge that the tremendous growing leadership and civic engagement that I've witnessed in your community, and the great work of organizations like ERCO and others that strengthen the fabric of Portland and really have shown up in important ways as we move through our work of building community together. In my previous role at Latino Network, we had the opportunity to work very closely with your community in many intercultural settings, and I've always really appreciated that experience and the contribution about building intercultural relationships together. So thank you for again for your contribution, and it's an honor to honor you today.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, colleagues. I had some prepared remarks. Almost everyone has covered them at least twice. I'm absolutely hungry after listening to this presentation. I want to say, Natasha, Alexandra, and Andre, it was your stories. Thanks for telling your stories. Thanks for talking about your mothers and those who came before you. And thank you for making home in Portland. And it was just so rich to hear what Portland is like because you and your families decided to take your some unrest and some very difficult circumstances, you found Portland, Oregon, and we're a much better city because of it. So I'm just really moved by your stories, and I haven't had borscht soup in so long. I lived on First Avenue in New York City back in the 80s, before you were born, Andre, and man, I sure enjoyed borscht soup. So anyway, besides knowing that it's getting close to dinner time, I just really celebrate the Slavic Heritage Month, and I really do hope that a lot of us will tune in to the virtual celebration on the 28th, because I am learning that those virtual celebrations do matter and they allow us to feel some connection at this important time. Thank you so much for being here. Bye.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. And I'm going to read the proclamation in English. And then fortunately we have Tamara Berkovskaya to read the proclamation in Russian. So I'll go ahead and read it in English to begin. Whereas Slavic and Eastern European Americans are one of Portland's largest immigrant and refugee communities, with over 150,000 people in the greater Portland area. And whereas Slavic and Eastern European Portlanders can trace their ancestry to 15 countries of the former Soviet Union and 14 Eastern European countries with unique languages, dialects, cultures, and histories. And whereas the city of Portland has many Slavic and Eastern European employees and a Slavic empowerment team that works to build a more inclusive and diverse workforce. And whereas the Slavic empowerment team shares culture, language, and art with city employees through celebrations, displays, performances. And whereas the Slavic empowerment team collaborates with diverse organizations, including Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, Portland State University Russian Flagship Program, Portland Khabarovsk Sister City Association, Slavic Advisory Council, and Coalition of Advisory Councils to the Portland Police Chief's Office. And whereas Portland is a welcoming, inclusive, and sanctuary city that celebrates its growing diversity. And whereas the city of Portland is proud of its relationship with all members of the Slavic and Eastern European community and will continue supporting their professional and economic advancement. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim the second week of January 2021 to be Slavic and Eastern European Heritage Week in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this week. Thank you. And Tamara, why don't you go ahead and please read the proclamation in Russian for us? And thank you for being here. And you're muted.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Поскольку американцы славянского и восточноевропейского происхождения являются одной из самых больших общин, представляющих иммигрантов и беженцев Портленда, которая насчитывает более 150 тысяч человек, и поскольку портландцы славянского и восточноевропейского происхождения своими корнями уходят в 15 стран бывшего Советского Союза и 14 восточноевропейских стран с их уникальными языками, диалектами, культурой и историей. И поскольку в городской управе Портленда работает много сотрудников славянского и восточноевропейского происхождения и есть славянская инициативная группа, которая формирует более инклюзивный и разнообразный рабочий коллектив, и поскольку славянская инициативная группа продвигает культуру, язык и искусство среди сотрудников городской управы путем проведения праздничных мероприятий, выставок и представлений, и поскольку славянская инициативная группа сотрудничает с различными организациями, включая организацию сообществ иммигрантов и беженцев, программу «Русский флагман» Государственного университета Портленда, Ассоциацию городов-побратимов Портленд-Хабаровск, Славянский консультативный совет и коалицию консультативных групп управления полиции Портленда. И поскольку Портленд – это гостеприимный, инклюзивный город-убежище, где чествуют растущее разнообразие, и поскольку городская управа Портленда гордится своими отношениями со всеми членами славянской и восточноевропейской общины и будет продолжать оказывать им поддержку, потому я, Тед Уиллер, мэр города Портленда, штат Орегон, города Росс, настоящим провозглашаю вторую неделю января 2021 года неделей славянского и восточноевропейского наследия в
Портленде и призываю всех жителей отмечать эту неделю. Thank you.
Thank you so much for reading that. We appreciate it. Thank you all for your testimony and helping us to put this together for this important celebration. Thank you all. And with that, colleagues, after a very productive and celebratory afternoon, we are adjourned.